Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. We got an hour, we got less than an hour, like 50-something minutes left of this rascal on a Thursday. So we're just, we're like a meteor just shooting towards the weekend on this show.
Oh, man, I'm shooting through that chicken from Little Blue Menu, man. Mm, and the carrots, too.
Yeah, but I don't know what they put in their carrots. But
I like the way they, it must be the way they make their food and their seasoning, because it is tasty. Man, oh, man, it's so good.
Yeah, appreciate them dropping by food. We sampled many chicken wings and also carrots. And I'm sure some of you are thinking, you knuckleheads are wasting stomach space on carrots. These carrots just hit different.
No, this is like what's marinated. It's, those things are nice. Even Lucas's beavers likes them.
I love carrots, just in general.
Is there anything you don't like? I'm just asking. Because Blaine asked you, like, hey, what's your favorite food? And you were like, how much time do we have?
I don't like liver. Like chicken liver?
Chicken liver.
Yeah.
Chicken liver.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that either, growing up especially. And it had this different taste to it. Then it was kind of chewy, even fried. Yeah. It just, I didn't like, eh, I'll pass.
Yeah.
Where's the chicken?
Other than that, there's nothing that comes to mind.
My next door neighbor used to buy just like the plastic tub of chicken livers and cut them into little slivers and deep fry them. And I'd never, I mean, I'm country as anything, and I had eaten everything fried, but my people never made livers. My mom didn't like it, so we never had that. So we moved when I was in the fourth grade. And, man, that lady made livers and gizzards. I ate it all.
Mm-hmm. But she would slice it up, too, though? I'm interested to see if I would like it sliced up. It was just because it became, like, chewy.
Right.
And it was like, ooh.
Little bite-sized pieces fried. Yeah. It is still kind of chewy.
Right.
But now I'll say this.
Put some hot sauce on it.
I don't put hot sauce. We didn't have hot sauce. We weren't big hot sauce people. I know you like
you
it.
You didn't have hot sauce.
Well, I mean, it was available. It was readily available.
I got you.
But, like, I never went anywhere, and it was on the table regularly.
Oh, no, it wasn't on the table. It just was in the pantry there. Anything that it probably would make me not really taste the food or make me want to like it, I would put hot sauce on it. Like, you know, dinner food.
Just like, okay, I'm not
like,
crazy
I really
about
don't
this.
Want this.
This will dress this up. And you like and to taste the hot sauce.
And I'll just, you know, it'd be like eating chicken in my mind. I'll try to psych my mind out.
I love chicken hearts. Very popular in Brazil to roast little chicken hearts.
I just think of little chickens running around with no heart.
It's a tiny little, it's a little tiny heart, and it's so good.
That's evil sounding.
You just said you thought about the little chicken's heart.
Yeah.
Because he says they make little chicken hearts. Well, watch this. Well, what do you think about when you're eating that breast?
It's
not
are a little chicken.
Or are you eating that thigh?
It's full size. I'm thinking
or
like a baby chicken. He's like Temple of Doom harvesting their tiny
it's a
chicken
baby
hearts.
Chicken or an adult chicken? You eating the chicken?
Running around with its head cut off and its heart cut out.
Boy, PETA's, we're going to be in a lot of trouble today if PETA's listening on this.
Man, come on.
I mean, okay. Is that a country thing in Brazil? Are these people out in, like, the sticks in Brazil?
No, it's just a popular, like, you know, Brazilian steakhouse.
I've never had it, though.
They will come around. If it's a real Brazilian steakhouse, it will come around with a giant skewer of little chicken hearts. And, like, people can say it's weird, but, like, people here eat chicken liver. So, it's, I mean, what's the difference? Heart, liver, it's all.
See, I've been to, like, Texas Day Brazil. I don't remember the long knife full of tiny chicken hearts.
Yeah,
I can say I've never had
it. I think Texas Day Brazil is one of the more, like, Americanized Brazilian steakhouses. Still great. Still great food.
Next time I go to Brazil, I'm going to go to some. I want to make sure I can get some chicken hearts.
Yeah. Coraçãozinho. That's what you ask for. It means little hearts.
I don't know. I may not win out on that. My wife's trying to go to, like, Europe or something.
I have a friend who lives on the beach in Athens, Greece. My childhood friend.
What?
My entire life, he's always told me, come on over. I could stay with him. Mm. I've never been.
I know.
How bad is that?
Just can never find time. And now you got a youngster, man.
Yeah, I'll never
it's
have time.
It's going to be tough. Yeah. You got to let the grandparents watch him. You'd go off on a vacay.
Hey, man, take that
rascal. It'd be feeling like not a vacay because the wife is always wondering what the kid's doing.
You know. That's a voice of experience right there.
Oh, man. We could go anywhere. I'm like, babe, leave Chase here. No, I'm not doing that. We're going to let the grandparents watch him. Nope. My mom may drop him. Your mom may smash him. I said, what?
Bill Haslam of that smashing debut as the Preds owner. He took over His portion today, I saw this report from Teresa Walker. He will have a minority share of Preds ownership this fall. The plan is for him to have the majority share in 3 years or 4 years at best. It didn't stream anywhere. So we're just kind of counting on the kindness of our media brethren and sisters.
Was that planned out, Lucas, the way they did this?
A few days ago, I had seen that they were going to have a 10:30 Thursday presser, and me and Buck even talked about it. We're going to carry it live, and there was nothing to carry live. They carried the Poyle Hines press conference, the postseason, like, wrap-up press conference to talk about the future of the franchise.
But why didn't they do that the same way?
I don't know. I mean, this felt like an even bigger deal than that. I mean, this is such a huge moment in the direction of the franchise.
They didn't want any traction on this. I think this was planned.
We get this for position coaches with the Titans.
Right.
That's what they do. Come out on the sidewalk and you just go back and forth. This was the president, the general manager, the new soon-to-be majority owner within 3 to 4 years. And
Herb Fritch, I guess the chairman.
Mm-hmm. Chairman. It was those four people all in a room at one time talking.
That's what Alex Doherty told us, and because he was there reporting on it.
Well, I mean,
at one point,
Alex Doherty says it.
They were all talking at the same time.
Mm. Okay, which we tried to run some Poyle audio earlier.
They should have just, you know, get the rumor started. Trotsky should just showed up. And then, you know, since he did buy a house here, by the way, someone told me this last week.
But he's been turning down head coaching jobs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, tired of coaching, get out of the grind, come back to Nashville. Everybody loves the old Trotzmeister here. And he's got his championship ring. He could show it off. Go down to the coffee shop with his buddies and wear it down there. Let everybody see it. So what are the main goals of the Predators' newest owner? Do we have someone to credit this audio to? Is it Alex?
Alex Doherty.
Alex Doherty.
First of all, this is good audio, right?
It is better audio.
Better, yeah. Well, better than what we heard before, that mumble jumble.
Okay, let's just see how it goes. This is Haslam on his main goals. Thanks, as Lucas. He joins the Preds ownership group.
You know, whether it's this year or down the line.
Yeah, I think one of the things is to make certain that the Preds stay at the very heart of the community. I mean, it really is admirable the way what's happened here. Because that's number one. Number two, we want to compete for the Stanley Cup. Now, I realize, hey, it doesn't work that way. You know, the Lightning and Avalanche are really good right now, but they had some pretty weak years in the past to get to be where they are now. And, you know, you realize that's part of the ebb and flow of sports teams. But I want to make certain we're competitive and that, you know, we have an organization that's focused on winning at every level. And that's, you know, maximizing the opportunity of the Preds and the brand and what that means. And it's also, you know, this is a pretty special block that Bridgestone Arena sits in, and maximizing the development potential of it as well.
How much?
Okay. So him being a businessman, he threw in at the end, like, this is a really nice block that we've got here. We need to maximize what we make on this block. Mm. It's a lot of money to be made on this block. Mm. A lot of tourists milling around.
Oh.
Going to cash in on some of that. And Preds fans, I'm sure,
we cash in on that?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, outside drink sales. I don't know. There's got to be some way that he's just a businessman, so he's got to be thinking. But if you're a Preds fan, you're like, I want to hear you say that it's spend all of the money to bring all. Hey, we're going to do whatever it takes to bring Philip Forsberg back. I'm going to pay $9.5 million for 8 years. I'm not cash poor. I got all this money.
My pockets is heavy.
They're heavy. I gotta loosen my load here with my money. So, but it was just like just things that people say we're gonna.
Well, he's still negotiating, so that's probably why they say the Forsberg part. But I think that's what he was referring to. That hey, we got to make some tough decisions, but it's all about making more money. You got to spend money to make more money. So we shall see. I'm hoping they go down this road and bring him back. Man, this would be devastating. Didn't Poyle say he had a B plan? I'm interested to see what that B plan is.
That he's waiting in this unintelligible soundbite that we ran earlier. You heard a little bit of it. He basically said, I wanted to have it done already. And then it was kind of hard to hear him, but he was like, essentially, if I had it done, then we could be going on and doing everything else. But since it's not, I have to have like a plan B. What's plan B? That's another guy for 6 years and $7 million?
Yeah.
Well, who's that?
B starts with B, bizzle, shizzle.
Are you ready to suit up for the Preds?
Yeah, suit up and put my suit.
Breaking news right there.
The BBNS, the Blaine Bishop Breaking News Sounder.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready to suit up with my suit and tie. You know, I'll assist in some coaching and show them how to just run through people. So if they need some physicality, I'll bring that. That's about all I can bring y'all.
Poyle on the Forsberg front. Here's a quote. You don't have to listen to the audio. I wish it was done. That's the quote that I wrote down that he said earlier.
And so do we.
Free agency begins on July 13th. July 13th.
Why isn't it done? He did offer to say that they offered him an 8-year deal. Didn't say the money and what it was per year, but he did say that. So at least we know they're somewhat halfway right in the years. Not on the cash
flow. They agree on that, it sounds like. Because you're right.
So maybe it's 8-8 or something. You know, it's just coming up a little short.
It doesn't sound like he wants a home, that Uncle Phil wants the hometown discount. So somebody said in his own TV chat, they thought 8 for 9.5, I think, but that's several pages ago. Maybe Lucas can still see it.
8, 9.5, he got it. Come on, man.
8 for 9.5. You signing that today, Lucas? Blaine's a tough GM. He's also a tough athletic director. Would you do that?
I would. Well, I just talked about Big Jeff. He has to give the hometown discount.
Yeah.
So certain players, I'm going to lean and give them a break, and I think we should get a break at certain times, and it's only fair. So I'm going to approach them differently. So I can't say that I'm always a hard GM. It's just about my approaches, because it's about the extent of how good the player is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would bend a little bit and say, hey, let's meet halfway in the middle. You want to stay here? We want you here. Let's get this thing done.
8 for 9. 9. 8 for 9. That's the hometown
discount. If I'm the player, I would do it. I would.
Don't even have to move.
No move. And you got to try to sell them on, you know, wherever you go, taxes will be a little different.
Oh, yeah.
You stampled here in the community. There's a lot of things. We're on the right track. We're not that far. You know, we just need a couple more pieces. Wherever you go, you may have the money, but you're not going to probably be as close as we are.
Well, we'll be watching. When the Titans, I said this at the beginning of the show, when the Titans changed ownership with Amy Adams Strunk, it completely changed the course of this franchise.
It felt like it was a brand new owner.
Yep.
Not within the family.
Same family.
And I said that numerous times on air. I did. So she was on the right track, and she was a big time business person, not just a business woman. And she shows that, you know, she's willing to do what it takes to win. Not only that, but for facilities, whether it's stadium or over at the practice facility. So all that looks like a totally different place compared to when I was there.
All right, when we come back, there's a ton of legal stuff going on in sports right now with Daniel Snyder and Congress and
Goodell.
And
his sheriff, he had to put his badge down. They told him, you no longer, it's been taken.
No, he checked his badge and his gun at that Zoom yesterday.
At the door, huh?
Yes, he did. Daniel Wallach, an attorney involved in a bunch of different places, The Athletic and the Conduct Detrimental podcast and more. He's going to join us next. We'll break down everything here on Blaine and Mickey.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. We got something else to give away, Lucas. We are just making it rain stuff on people. Oh, we're teasing things that we're giving away. 104.5 The Zone teaming up with Big Machine Racing to give one lucky winner an ultimate NASCAR VIP experience with Big Machine Racing. Chance to meet Tyler Reddick, who drives the 48 Spiked Coolers Chevrolet. The Tennessee Lottery 250 VIP experience includes garage, pit, and hauler tour. You can walk the starting grid pre-race and more. Experience the race from pit road, which will be absolutely amazing. You got to do that one time. The coolest thing ever. Tickets are going fast, so call 866-RACETICKS or visit NashvilleSuperspeedway.com. Be sure to listen to us, Blaine and Mickey, because we're the ones who make all your dreams come true for your chance to win a pair of tickets and qualify for the ultimate NASCAR VIP experience courtesy of Big Machine Racing. Sorry, it's a lot to get through there, but it's a big deal, just like our next guest, Daniel Wallach. He's a big deal, and he joins us now on the Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline. Daniel, have you ever experienced the magic of a NASCAR race from pit road?
I can't say that I have. As a native New Yorker, living, growing up in Queens and Brooklyn and New York City, there weren't a lot of NASCAR tracks in my neighborhood. So, I was limited. They're limited to ice hockey. So, no. Even though I live in Florida now, I've yet to experience my first NASCAR event ever.
We got to make that happen for you. He is Daniel Wallach at Wallach Legal, the Athletic and Conduct Detrimental podcast, and so many other places. So yesterday we're on the air, and the Goodell stuff is kind of happening in real time. So we're not consuming in real time like a lot of people. So, you know, you go back and you read and you try to come up with some Cliff's Notes. What were your biggest takeaways from the Roger Goodell appearance before Congress yesterday?
That he was very well prepared, you know, obviously for the 3 hours he testified, it probably was matched by, 30 hours of preparation to make sure he didn't slip up, because Roger Goodell historically has had some difficult moments during press conferences where the league doesn't like to put him out in these unprepared or extemporaneous moments too often. But I think he did his job yesterday in terms of limiting the potential damage to the NFL. He said a couple of things that I think in retrospect are going to be held up to scrutiny. Like, for example, he never adequately addressed the question of why can't you just release the Wilkinson report detailing all of these investigative findings and just redact the names of the witnesses. His talking point has always been, well, there are some people who don't want to have their names revealed and came to us confidentially. And it's a bogus excuse, because it's commonplace for materials that contain sensitive information to have redactions on them, meaning black marks where magic marker straight through it, where you can't even read the name or the narrative or identify who it involves. So those witnesses who wish to have their stories made public can actually do that and at the same time protect the identities of those people who don't wish to be publicized, while at the same time bringing transparency. And I never have understood why the NFL made a big deal out of releasing reports in Deflategate, Bullygate, Bountygate, yet nothing in probably the most serious of those four investigations.
Man, Daniel Wallach joining us here, attorney, breaking down all the NFL's legal, I'll say, troubles and more lately here on Blaine and Mickey.
They don't like people messing with their house, Daniel. Thanks for coming on. I guess, first and foremost, how transparent, was Roger Goodell? I mean, I feel like, I can't, take this ownership from him, but he can advise the other owners to vote against him, to vote him out, right?
He wouldn't even admit that much.
Right.
He was asked point blank, don't you have the power to force Dan Snyder to sell the team? And he said, I don't have that authority. But what he neglected to say, as many people, including myself, pointed out, is that right there in the NFL Constitution and bylaws, he has the power to recommend to the executive committee of the NFL that he be divested of his ownership interest. He can start the process, and only he can start the process. Mm. So he's not the final say on the matter, but he is the sort of the engine that starts that car. And he wasn't being forthright when testifying on that issue before Congress. He said a lot of things that weren't particularly transparent. But ultimately, this is all about, this committee is all about trying to find out what truly happened over this nearly quarter of a century period in which Dan Snyder, as this hands-on owner, oversaw the most toxic workplace environments in sports history. And to this day, we still don't know how bad it was. And to just have a slap on the wrist, a $10 million fine, seems to be very underwhelming and not any sense of accountability or justice. So until the hearing was commenced and this investigation was spawned by the NFL's refusal to release any of the details of the investigation. And it's going to come out one way or the other, either through the subpoena power of Congress or maybe John Gruden in his own lawsuit against the National Football League will be able to get at these materials. Because remember, the emails that were sent to the Wall Street Journal and New York Times, in which Gruden is portrayed as a racist, misogynist individual, that came out of the Commander's investigation. So eventually the gig will be up and we'll find out what really happened. So this has been this battle by the National Football League and by Dan Snyder to keep this information concealed from the public. And the objective of Congress, while it's ultimately, the stated purpose is to help workers and protect workers with new federal laws, the real, I guess, underlying objective, sort of if you really want to get at the full truth here, is to force the NFL and the Commanders to release the investigative materials. That's the objective, short term and long term, and eventually that will happen. And right now, we're getting a little bit closer, because for the first time, Congress is exercising its subpoena power. Mm-hmm. Because right now, all they've been doing is extending the courtesy of invitations and voluntary compliance. So 7 months later, we're now on the doorstep of the first court-ordered or congressional-issued subpoena being given to one of the witnesses in this case, and that's going to be Dan Snyder. So we may get a little bit closer to some kind of finality here, or some, court case that will decide whether these materials have to be turned over to Congress.
Well, Daniel, after listening to all that and with how slow our judicial system is, eventually when the rubber meets the road and they know they have to give up these reports from the Commanders, do their investigation, can they still find a way to weasel out of that? Like, is there like, we're going to force him out and he's going to sell the organization, or something that can halt all that happens, let's say a year or two down the road, if we even get to that point, can they figure a way to get out of it legally?
Yeah. Running out the clock is one goal. I mean, remember, this is a House Oversight Committee that is being led by the Democratic part of the House Oversight Committee. If the elections yield a different, party in control of Congress, then, this congressional investigation is going to be ground to a halt and it won't go anywhere. So part of the goal of Dan Snyder is to basically play defense and to stall, delay appearances. And then if he's subpoenaed, he'll file a federal court lawsuit, which will delay things even more, because if he loses in one round, he'll take an appeal to the Federal Court of Appeals and then maybe go to the Supreme Court, all with the objective of avoiding any compelled testimony or production documents. I mean, in the impeachment proceedings with Donald Trump, there are a number of witnesses who successfully deployed that tactic. And while they may not have eventually won their individual lawsuits on the merits, just by filing the lawsuit and resisting the subpoenas, they were able to run out the clock and accomplish their goal of not testifying. And I think Dan Snyder is probably going to proceed down a similar route. I have more faith in John Gruden successfully getting these materials than this House Oversight Committee, which is really facing a couple of obstacles here: the passage of time, the potential loss of power following the elections, and then there's no guarantee that a court will agree that Dan Snyder should turn over these records or voluntarily submit to a live testimony before Congress, because there are some legitimate questions being raised as to whether the House Oversight Committee has exceeded its authority. Congress's main job is to write laws, not to conduct, investigations into individual private companies. They're not law enforcement. They're not prosecutors. And you can't single out private individuals for retribution under the guise of passing new federal laws. So it's possible that Dan Snyder could have a winning argument that this is nothing more than, I hate to use the word witch hunt, but this is nothing more than a selective, targeted investigation that's designed to harass, embarrass, and punish the accused, rather than to seek information that is designed to help American workers in general and to provide broader workplace protections. I mean, you could say what the purpose is, but in reality, it might be seen as more targeted towards the Washington Commanders. So he's going to argue that. And he's going to argue that all the documents themselves are covered by the attorney-client privilege. And there's a question over whether that doctrine, which applies in lawsuits, extends to congressional proceedings. So the next phase of this saga is likely to play out in a court.
Well, Daniel, man, that was great information. I didn't have that even thought to ask you that, but as I was listening to you, man, I feel like this is going to go to a screeching halt and dead end at some point. Well, with the Gruden case, I guess, kind of take us through how that process could actually play out. As you mentioned, it could help Gruden that he actually gets through the reports. And what did it say in the reports that, you know, why they brought the lawsuit against him? What did it actually say in there?
Well, his lawsuit accuses the NFL and Roger Goodell of leaking emails
right.
from the Washington Commanders investigation to make him look
right.
You know,
what did it actually say in those emails, though? That's what I'm getting at. What did it say?
Oh, I don't remember exactly, but I think racist, misogynistic. They were very crude emails in which he made disparaging racist comments about Demaurice Smith. He referred to Roger Goodell in very unflattering ways, using coarse language and just a lot of sexist type of stuff. I mean, the type of information, if you put in a company-wide email, would get you fired. Mm-hmm. But he made these statements, as bad as they were, when he was a broadcaster for ABC 10 years before he ever got fired. He made these statements through an email when he wasn't even an NFL employee.
Yeah.
So his lawsuit is all about finding out who was the source of weaponizing these emails and selectively leaking them and releasing them to various media publications in order to put pressure on Raiders owner Mark Davis to fire Roger Goodell. So he one of the first battles in the Gruden case is over arbitration, and the NFL has filed a motion to try to take the entire lawsuit that Gruden filed and shift it entirely into private arbitration before none other than NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. They argued that, you know, that Gruden's coaching contract, just like your player contract back in the day, has an arbitration provision that mandates that any disputes between the employer and the employee have to be settled by arbitration under league rules. And the NFL lost that argument. The Nevada judge rejected the notion that someone who was no longer an employee of the NFL or a team had an obligation to arbitrate disputes with the National Football League. So the bottom line that this case is now going to go forward in a public setting, in a trial court, in a judicial proceeding in Nevada, and the NFL is going to appeal that ruling. But if Gruden is able to avoid getting his case tossed out on appeal, the next step in the process is to serve discovery demands under the court process to turn over all of the investigative materials from the Washington Commanders investigation, anything that could bear on the issue of who weaponized these emails to force John Gruden out of his job.
So the Gruden investigation could be the Debbie Downer to Goodell and the Commanders. Man.
No question, but I don't think Gruden needs every single document that bears on sexual misconduct that doesn't involve any of his communications. I mean, his communications are like a needle in the haystack. So there's going to be a big discovery battle over what portions of these investigative materials actually bear on John Gruden and how broad his fishing expedition can be. Will he be able to look at everything, or just those emails that happen to mention him? I mean, at this point, we don't have discovery demands or discovery requests yet to know exactly what Gruden's legal team will be seeking, but that remains a sort of a dark horse candidate to be the forum through which the NFL's investigation of the Commanders can see the public light by using the court-ordered discovery process in a civil lawsuit, because that case is going to go on for years potentially, while the congressional investigation may shut down by the end of 2022, depending upon the election results.
There you have it, Daniel Wallach.
Hey, on the way out, we got about a minute left, and this is fantastic stuff. We're all watching the Deshaun Watson thing as well. How long do you think he gets suspended, and does the fact that, 20 of 24 cases will be settled, how does that affect what might or might not happen?
It has an impact because each alleged incident of sexual misconduct is a separate offense. Mm-hmm. Remember when you know Ezekiel Elliott was suspended for 6 games for the incident with sort of his ex-girlfriend, and that was one incident. And there was a college, there was somebody from his past that made a similar accusation. And under the personal conduct policy, if you have a second offense, that can act as a multiplier and transform a 6-game suspension into potentially a lifetime career banishment. So under the existing personal conduct policy, any multiple offenses, even if they're all involving similar time frames and similar factual allegations, they're all separate allegations of separate personal conduct policy offense. So that's the risk he faces, that if you settle 20 out of 24, that doesn't buy you closure in the National Football League, because the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, and 24th can constitute their own separate offenses. And what if new people sue? He saw 66 massage therapists over a 2.5-year period. And settling 20 cases doesn't give you a waiver or a full exoneration for the other 46. It only provides you closure with the 20 that you've settled. So that's the risk that Deshaun Watson faces. But I got to tell you, he's already sat out a year.
But he was getting paid, though. He was getting paid.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. I mean, mm-hmm. Blaine, you played, and getting paid isn't the same thing as suiting up with your teammates, because if you're sidelined for a full year, there's a little bit of ring rust that builds up, and you lose some progress. You lose out on career accomplishments, the possibility of competing for championships. And if you suspend them for another year based on nothing more than a civil lawsuit, you've got 2 years, 2 years of total inactivity, which is basically a 2-year suspension in a career that might last 10 to 15 years. So that's like 20% of his career, when none of this ever resulted in a criminal prosecution. It was just a civil lawsuit brought by, albeit 24 people, but all represented by the same attorney and all telling basically the same story. So I would argue, if I were Deshaun Watson, that this is not fair and consistent discipline, because other owners, the personal conduct policy of the NFL applies to everybody, not just the players. It applies to the owners, team officials, representatives, anybody in the organization. And how could you suspend Watson for 2 years for alleged conduct that Robert Kraft, Jerry Jones, Dan Snyder committed? And you know how many games the three of them collectively were suspended for? Zero.
Zero.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, I think, one of his main attacks on any discipline. Of course, I think the smart thing for the league and for Watson to do is to negotiate a compromise resolution where maybe Watson agrees to 6 games, he can't appeal it, and that will be the end of it. But if the league tries to suspend him for a full year, the lead argument is definitely going to be the fair and consistent discipline, because it's part of the CBA. And in Bountygate, for example, former commissioner Paul Tagliabue set aside some of the discipline because there was disparate treatment in the fact that the league had historically fined teams but didn't suspend players. And he used that precedent of selective enforcement to set aside the discipline when a player was suspended for the same conduct that in the past only the teams were fined for. And Barbara Jones in the Ray Rice case, in her arbitration decision, she recognized the importance of fair and consistent discipline. So Watson's primary, or one of his main arguments, is going to be that disparate discipline is a violation of labor law and a violation of the CBA.
Daniel, fantastic stuff. We're a little bit over, but I know everybody, this was fantastic stuff. Yes. Thank you for the time, man. Great stuff. Daniel Wallach, at Wallach Legal. Follow him. The Athletic, writing their conduct detrimental pod in other places. Thank you, sir, for the time.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure as always. Thank you, guys.
Yes, sir. Man, that was good. All right. When we come back, the number one overall football recruit has made a decision, and there's a huge athletic event tonight that apparently a bunch of you don't know about. We'll let you know what it is. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Arch Manning, he's hot for the teachers at the University of Texas. He has committed to the University of Texas. He's the number one recruit in 2023.
Blaine's face just now.
This song is called Hot for Teacher. He didn't have his headphones on, so he couldn't hear the music.
It wasn't plugged in all the way.
Yeah, it wasn't plugged in. So he's like, wait a second, Hot for Teachers? What? Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was using the van. I'm just being a cheesy radio guy. That's it. That's all I'm doing. No surprise. I think he's been connected to Texas forever, but he will get to play in the SEC because Texas is going to get there eventually.
Yeah, well, will it be his junior year? They got two more years, right? So he will be...
That contract expires as far as the conference goes in 2025, but who's to say it can't be earlier?
Well, he'll at least get, at worst case scenario, 1 year.
Yeah.
In the SEC.
Hook 'em horns, man.
Yeah.
They got him. They got the number one guy. No pressure on him, but literally all the pressure in the world. Now, he may be some laid-back kid, but that's... Hey, man. You're a Manning Super Bowls.
I would say he's done it thus far. So I don't know if it really, I mean, Ben, what is he, the number one recruit overall?
He is number one.
And quarterback? I mean, that's already a lot of pressure there. So granted, the pressure continues to grow, but come on now. He's a Manning.
Man, oh, Manning. Arch is headed to the Longhorns. If you're younger, you're thinking, why? Well, once upon a time, and historically, Texas is a powerhouse. And historically, money-wise, nobody has more of it than the University of Texas. They typically are the largest budgeted athletic program
in the country.
Yep.
Oh, that's why the beef between them and A&M. Yeah. Who has longer money?
Boy, that's a lot of money, Ben. That's just all the money in the world. Also, tonight, I asked this question earlier on the Blaine and Mickey Twitter. Are you aware that the NBA draft is today? 72% said no. They did
not know. I'm going to be honest. I did not know until 2 days ago.
Okay.
Well, you know today, why, though. Oh, I know why? Because it was commercial. It was commercial. I was like, oh, dang. Why don't I know that the draft is today? I mean, like 2 days ago, I was saying that.
I found out 2 days ago, too. I saw Tennessee basketball's Twitter put something out there.
And I was just like, oh, man, this is horrible. This is horrible that nobody even really cares, really.
Orlando picks first, and OKC picks second, and Houston picks third. Get ready for like a bunch of talk about upside from guys you've never heard of and places you've never heard of. Although, it's a bunch of college guys at the top. Chet Holmgren, who's funny to look at because he's just the tallest, skinniest dude ever. 7 feet tall. Paolo Banchero, 6'10 forward from Duke, Jabari Smith, the forward from Auburn, and Jaden Ivey, who I saw with a really nasty dunk earlier. Those are kind of the four guys at the top. And he's 6'4 shooting guard from Purdue. He's an interesting cat. All these guys can do some stuff. Obviously, they wouldn't be in this position. Kennedy Chandler, I've seen ranked anywhere from 20 to 25. And for Vandy folks wondering about Scottie Pippen, like around 60 is where I kind of saw him rated.
No, some people are saying he may not get drafted, and that may be a good thing. I think he comes in at, one of those unprotected, try to make the roster, which probably, he'd probably have a better shot that way. But hopefully he gets drafted. Second round doesn't get guaranteed contract when you say 60. So
get ready for 8 million trades and people taking on money and just – the NBA is a never-ending math problem.
People it's
just
wearing the hats of the teams they're not going to play for.
They will never even go to that city till they play in that city with the team where they wind up playing. As it is, though, we got to get out of here. So get your NBA draft popcorn ready for tonight to watch the NBA draft. Sure, it'll be on ESPN. They're big on that kind of thing.
Yeah.
3HL, they're next. I'm sure Ron Slay's going to break it all down. So stick around for that because it's coming.
Yep. In the meantime.
In between time.
As always.
You know it.
Peace.